Well, good morning, everyone. Let's take our Bibles and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Sometimes it can surprise you what people will say to you. I remember recently, and just a couple of years back, I was at a store checking out, and you know, there inside the convenience store, there was a television playing, and they were telling just some kind of a news report about someone that had just passed away, and flashed a picture up on the television of the person that had passed away. It was an older person. And the clerk there at the store and I turn around as we look back at the story. And the clerk says to me, "How sad. Every time an old person passes away, it's like we're losing a library of knowledge." And I thought, wow, that's incredibly profound. But as she turned back to me, I couldn't help but notice she had a tattoo on her forehead that said stupid, S-T-O-O-P-I-D. Now, there had to have been a story behind that one. What prompts a person to do that? And I asked, I said, "Is there a story behind that tattoo on your forehead?" She said that it was her understanding that you could gain some life credibility or life points by putting that on there. She thought that putting something on her face would give her some, at least make a statement about her life wisdom that she has. And it certainly did, because that's not the way you spell stupid. And it was on her forehead right there. And that's the thing that I didn't know if she was telling me that I'm stupid or that she was stupid for having it there. But as we had a little bit of a chuckle there about that spot on her forehead, I couldn't help but think, how much relevant is Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 11 through 14? As I was thinking over that story this morning, how relevant her story, our story, Solomon's observations about wisdom that we find here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We're going to be looking at verses 11 through 14 this morning as we're going to look at the better gift that God has given us. Now, the value of working through the book of Ecclesiastes is a lesson far greater than just dealing with these difficult observations that are very gloomy and very dreary. As a matter of fact, Solomon is making some spot-on observations that helps us to pause, to question, to evaluate what we really do think matters in this life. Sometimes we are off base, and sometimes we're right on track. And as we look at Solomon's observations, we realize that depending upon what our worldview is, how we view how the world works and who's in control of the world, his observations can lead to great hopelessness, or they can be a source of comfort and a source of really just making us to be more even keeled to understand how we navigate the structure and the frustrations of life. Because he's giving us some real insightful observations about the meaning of life. So if you're hang up on his statement about life and everything in this life of being vanities, all is vanity, if you think that that's where the story ends, hold on, because by the time we get to chapter 12, he's going to give us some great application. And this morning, we're going to answer a big question about life and about who's in charge in life. And I want you to know, it's not us. And that leads us to a healthy perspective of being able to see how it is that you and I should live out our life under the sun and how our life counts. But the problem that we find every day is that life moves at such a pace that it really does just, it's so easy for us to get distracted and to miss the opportunity to ask those big questions or to stay on target, because there are so many forces pulling against us. Work issues, money trouble, family issues, even our health works against us, and it keeps us distracted from seeing the big and the bigger picture. The point of Ecclesiastes is that there is a greater purpose to life than simply living here under the sun. And it's been our focus in this series that hope-filled life purposely and intentionally thrives in surrender under Jesus the Son. Today's focus, we are going to look at godly wisdom that sees the real value in every circumstance. And this morning, as we work through verses 11 and 12 and 13 and 14, we'll see the better gift and the better lesson. Let's go ahead now at this time and look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 11 and 12. Solomon tells us, "Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it." Let's go, Lord, in prayer and ask Him to bless our time together. Lord Jesus, we come to You this morning. We pray that You would bless this reading of Your Word. Lord, I pray today that Your Holy Spirit would speak to us from Your Word. Lord, that You would give us some insights about what's really important in life. And Lord, if we have placed our hope, if we have placed our confidence in stuff and not You, we've missed the mark. And Lord, I pray this morning that You would give us the wisdom to see what really matters in this life. Trusting You, serving You, following You in the good times and the bad. We ask these things in Your name. Amen. If it hasn't been said enough throughout this series, may we start off this morning with this reality. We need to abandon the error that money will solve all your troubles. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, remember back when we studied, "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity." The problem with money is that we never, ever have enough. A couple of weeks ago, I asked you to think about what would be the dollar amount that you would think that would take for you to be considered rich or to be at that place that you are comforted with. And that still comes up in my house. My wife, you know, as we're talking, Melina and I will talk, and she'll say, what was your number again? And how close are we to that? And my answer always removes all of her hope because we know we're not going to make that number. But the reality and the observation that he's making here, that if you make your life be about how much money you can collect, you're never, ever going to hit that goal, because once you do cross that threshold, there's always going to be someone who has a little bit more. And if that's really our motivating factor, just gathering stuff that we call valuable, what is the all of this stuff? Because at the end of the day, as Solomon points out, this uncomfortable truth, we can't take it with us. We have to leave it here. So all of our time spent gathering and collecting and piling up is going to be something that someone else will have to deal with. So if you love money, you're never, ever going to have enough money. And if you love having more money, you're never, ever going to have enough money. So abandon this notion that money is going to free you from any of and all of your problems. In fact, in the next verse, the observation is that trouble with money is that it only compounds our problems. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 11, "When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes?" The more you have, the more responsibility you have with what you have. And don't think that a life padded with lots and lots of money will bring you lasting satisfaction and lasting comfort. And I say, trust me, because I don't have any money. And you think, well, that's easy for you to say because you don't have money. You're probably never going to have money. And so to make that statement, that sounds good. But what about someone who has money? Have you ever thought about that temptation that we we face, that enticement that wouldn't it be great that if all of our bills were taken care of, that if we didn't have to worry about the broken down maintenance issues in our houses, that we'd be able to get to that place where we could live comfortably, then I think life would certainly have so many fewer problems and life would be so much easier. But remember, when it comes to money, resist the temptation to think that money will solve your problems. Because we find in one of Jesus' parables, a young man who thought that that was going to be the secret to his happiness. Watch out for this statement. It's this idea, this notion that if I could just get to that place where I had enough, everything would get much better. And in this case, in the parable, this young man said, if I only had my inheritance now. Of course, I'm talking about the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15. We're looking at verses 11 through 13. Jesus tells us, and he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portions of good that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And I find here in verse 12, what an incredibly heartbreakingly sad statement by this young man and a heartbroken response by the father in this simple request to give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. The father divides them unto the two sons. And not many days thereafter, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country and there wasted his substance with riotous living. You think, well, that's where the sadness is. He got everything and he just blew it. He takes it and he lets people give him some bad advice and he just mismanages his money, and that's the tragedy in Luke chapter 15, verse 2. No, it's that the son valued his inheritance over his father. He said, Dad, I know what's coming to me, and I want it now. And how heartbreaking that is. Because when you think about the way inheritance works, it's the legacy that's left for the descendants and the legacy left for the family, the son. And in order for the son to make this statement, I don't think it's a very far step to say that the intonation behind the son's request, Dad, it would be better for me if you would just go ahead and die so I could get what's coming to me. Now, I realize that's reading into the passage, but he's letting his dad know that he values his stuff more than he values his dad. And how tragically terrible that is. And the father divides them up among the two sons. The error of the son's value system is really revealed in his foolishness with what he does with his inheritance. He has it all with him. He looks at it. He packs it up and he leaves and he goes out to make a name for himself and he squanders it all in riotous living, Jesus tells us. And it doesn't make any sense how he could blow it so quick. Because I'm in a room this morning with people who are responsible and resourceful, who maybe came through one of the most difficult periods of our nation's history in the Great Depression, and they said, you don't throw away anything. You keep everything. There's value in everything. And how in the world could this young man just squander his money, just throw it away? But it doesn't take that much imagination, because we have each and every one of us squandered our resources at some point in our life. I can remember having a friend early on when we'd get paid. My friend would say, you know what, this paycheck's not going to last me till the end of the month. It's not going to last me till the end of the week. So how about we go out for dinner and I'm just going to blow it all at dinner. So you take me to McDonald's and we're just going to live it up. This was the statement of a young person, right? So we'd go to McDonald's and I'd say, you know, we don't have to. I can just sit and watch. I'm just going to watch you eat because I'm trying to make my money last. I've got to pay for my gas that brought you here to McDonald's. And my friend say, well, you know what? We're just going to let me just buy you something. I'm just going to spend it because there's no point in worrying about what to do with it at the end of the month because I know it's not going to get there. And I'd say that would be a great problem to try to have. I would try to give her counsel that if you would just try to sit on it, if you just try to use it, next week, tomorrow, you wouldn't be in the pits of despair because you didn't have, you had money that you could use. You wouldn't have to worry about where it was coming from. And my friend, every month, it was just part of this vicious cycle. I've got money, I've got to get rid of it. Moms and dads, is that the way that seems to be with your young kids? That you got it, it's burning a hole in your pocket. That's the expression that we use. The son's value system is revealed in what he does with his money. Not only does he not care about his dad, he doesn't care about the inheritance in truth. Because he's trying to find happiness, he's trying to find satisfaction, he's trying to kickstart his life, and he squanders it and he wastes it. But just imagine with me if the response to this parable, what our response would be if the son had wisely invested and grew his resources. Would the story be so tragic? There was a son who went to his father and said, Father, give me of mine inheritance. And the dad splits it between the two, and the young man goes and he puts it in the bank, and it compounds and grows annually. And the young man has a sizable empire because he was wise with his resources. Some of us think, well, now that's a better story. That one certainly does make a lot more sense, that this young man, if he took his money and just exercised some discipline, he could really retire early and have a comfortable life. And we'd still miss the point of the story because the son did not value his dad. He wanted what was coming. Had the son taken his money and really made it, and so that his resources, that his family, that his empire that he builds for himself, that it was greater than his dad's, it doesn't change the fact that he does not value his dad and his family. He values stuff. Just because we're more sympathetic to wisdom, that if he were to go and compound it by investing it wisely, just because we're sympathetic to wisdom more than foolishness doesn't change the fact that the son valued his inheritance over his father. The story's tragic if he takes his money and deals with it wisely, or if he takes it and deals with it foolishly. Because he goes away, and while he's there eating with the swine, he comes to his senses and he says to himself, I'm going to go back to my dad and tell him that I don't deserve to be called a son, that I should have the opportunity that one of his servants has. And as he comes home to tell his dad that he's sinned against him, his dad meets him there and gives him a robe and a ring and puts on the celebration. You find here in this father's heart the father that values his son over his stuff. While the son doesn't care anything about his family, he only wants what's coming to him. The dad in the story values his son. And oh, the heart of our Lord that's revealed in this parable about having a right value system. As a matter of fact, as you look at all of the parables in Luke chapter 15, it's about having something lost and finding it, having it regained. And there is such great hope that I'm going to save that for just a few moments when we get towards the end of the message. But just because we're sympathetic to wisdom and not to foolishness doesn't change the fact that this son did not value his father, but instead he valued his inheritance. Now, let's look back at verse 11 because Solomon shares his commentary on inheritance with wisdom. See, now that's the distinction here. The prodigal son, clearly a case of inheritance without wisdom. Wisdom was not privy in any step of this young man's life except when he lost everything and he was at that place of great hopelessness that he knew there was only one place to where he could return, to his father's house to beg forgiveness. Solomon is going to make some commentary this morning for us about an inheritance with wisdom. He tells us in verse 11, wisdom is good with an inheritance. Now, only a fool would value his inheritance over his family. And given the choice of wisdom or money, choose wisdom. Proverbs 3, verses 13 through 14. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver and the gain thereof than fine gold. So given the choice between great riches or great wisdom, follow Solomon's example and seek out that wisdom, because wisdom will help you with your resources. It will help you to be like Joseph in the book of Genesis, as we see that as that time of famine was coming to Egypt, how the Lord used Joseph to ready Egypt to provide for Israel and his family. When the famine came, Israel, Jacob, and his sons go and they go to Egypt and they're able to have their needs met because even though they had thrown Joseph into a pit and sold him into slavery, and Joseph's story is incredibly bewildering how the trajectory of his life goes. If you were trying to chart it out, he's among his father's choice sons. His brothers are jealous. They sell him into slavery. From slavery, he's sent into the house of Potiphar. And he's falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. He gets thrown into prison. And he's left in prison. And then he's called out of prison to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And the story takes a dramatic turn when he's appointed second in charge in Egypt. And he's there in that place during that time of famine to help make preparations with the resources that were available to him, so that when the famine comes, they were buffered and they were padded. Boy, now that is sound wisdom, and that's great planning about having money, because it will get you through difficult times. But having the wisdom to make those resources last, now that is an amazing story that we see in the life of Joseph. And wisdom with inheritance comes down to simply knowing the limitations of both. Let's work through that right quick. If you have wisdom, but you have no money, you might be able to make some money through hard work. Because you know that's how we get money. We have to work hard, have a steady job, and we will eventually get a little bit of money. But having money is not the same thing as having wisdom. Having money just quite simply means that you've got some extra resources. And if you're not wise with what you have, it's going to run out. It's not going to last. That's what's crazy about money. Regardless of what that dollar amount was that you picked a few weeks ago, it would never, ever be enough. And it never, ever could be enough, quite simply because we don't know what tomorrow holds. So you might have undershot. So probably the person here who said $1 trillion, maybe you were getting closer if that was in case, but it wasn't a realistic number. But the purpose and the value of wisdom with inheritance is knowing the limitations of what to do and knowing how to navigate life wisely, using the resources that God has given us. And when it comes to terms with our work and our money and our family issues, wisdom can help us work easier. You know, there's that saying that they say, work smarter, not harder. I get reminded by that all summer long, the kids that work with me out at Camp Deer Lake. You know, it would be so much easier if someone else did this. And I said, I know it would be, but that's your purpose and that's your job, is for you to do it and not for me. And I know that as much as you would like for me to do it, you are hired to do this job. So please, complete your task. But wisdom certainly does make our work easier. And wisdom with our resources really can make our lives a lot more comfortable because we're not constantly worrying from moment to moment. And you know what? I think that even if we don't have enough money to make it through a very difficult place in our life, that with just wisdom principles that you and I aren't going to come unglued and we're not going to worry, we're not going to be at the end of our rope because we understand that there are opportunities. There's always a way that we can take our resources and stretch them just a little bit further. And wisdom coupled with our money really does help us to live a comfortable life, but it's not necessarily the secret to a comfortable life. Because money does run out. Wisdom with our family, it certainly does lead to a peaceable life. But you know what? I also see at the same time, I see people who have done their best raising up their children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, making sure that investment is in their child's life to have a godly heritage, and the child just goes off the rails, and there's conflict and there's trouble. And don't lose your wisdom in that moment. Don't snap and act foolishly. Step back and remember what's important, stuff or people. And love what's really important. And don't worry about what's not, or our health when we think about our health. Sure, living wisely does lead to a longer life. I don't know why my go-to is always Brother Clifton on the occasion of U.S. going to the moon. But that story that you tell about the getting on top of the propane tank and lighting the fire underneath it, I completely empathize with it because that sounds like something that I would do. Hop on top of it, light a fire because you want to be blown to the moon, and your mama beat you back down to the earth is what the way that story ends. And I think that what's the value in life of living foolishly when you and I, with just some discipline, with a little bit of wisdom, we can really add to the quality of our life. But I want you to know at the same time, a long life isn't a happy life. Easy times with a family isn't necessarily a peaceable family. Having lots of money isn't necessarily being in the place of comfort. And having easier job to do isn't satisfying work. No, wisdom and inheritance, as he points out, is something that you can say that they work well together, but in truth, of both, wisdom and inheritance is only valuable to those who are alive. So you spend your entire life gaining wisdom, you don't share it, you don't have anybody to transmit it to, you don't take it with you. You spend your entire life gathering up resources. By the end of the story, by the end of your journey, you cannot take them with you. You can pass them along, but you can take neither with you. So we look at verse 12, we see that wisdom provides better protection in life. For wisdom is a defense and money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Wise living works in easy times and in difficult moments. That's the value of wisdom. It's a constant, regardless of the circumstance. And it is the wisdom that we gather from the difficult moments that are really invaluable. I mean, you can put a dollar amount on the lessons that we learn through going through difficult moments in life. You learn either not to do that again. Sometimes that comes when you're corrected and someone helps you straighten that out. You learn to sidestep and to abandon or to not go anywhere near that problem because you realize it's a temptation and a weakness for you. And we find that in our life, when you and I live wisely, it provides a sense of constancy in easy times and in difficult times. Because the truth is, if you're going to compare the protection that wisdom gives you versus the protection that money gives you, money's going to eventually run out, and especially in hard times, it's going to go even quicker. Anybody concerned about the world economy right now, about how that affects us day by day, how it affects your retirement account and what those numbers look like? It's amazing to think that just one trip to the hospital could really put a tax on your resources. So if you're trusting in money, I'm not trying to cause you to have a heart attack this morning, because that would certainly spend your money a lot quicker, but you understand that money can only get you so far, and there's no substitute for good health. Money's going to run out. But wisdom for protection isn't just about gathering knowledge. No, it's about applying that knowledge to our life. So if you learn a whole lot of facts, you could be incredibly smart. Have you ever known anybody that had, they were just really brilliant, but they had no common sense? You know that type of person? You wonder, how in the world do they even function in this life? I mean, yes, you can give me an answer, but you have no common sense about how to live life. You might as well just have stupid tattooed across your forehead. Wisdom is gathering knowledge and applying that knowledge to our life. It was Proverbs 13, verse 14. The law of wise is a fountain of life, to depart from the snares of death. You know what the real point of living is? Not dying. The real goal of my every day is to not die. Not that I'm scared of death, but I don't do certain things because I know that it will hasten my ultimate agenda of living through the day. The problem that we have with wisdom is that sometimes we fail to see, just at the base level, what the greatest threat in life is. It's failing. It's not living. And for Solomon to make these observations about life, money is not the answer. And wisdom is going to provide a far better protection. And unlike money that decreases as you spend it, wisdom grows the more you apply it. And that's why people who are wise seem to have it a little bit easier. As you take those lessons that you've learned through life and apply them to your life, you certainly do have a little bit easier life than someone who's struggling, who can't just shake that problem because the problem's getting the best of them. So just on this surface of life under the sun, know that money kept doesn't increase in value. It decreases in value, but wisdom spent only increases. So now let's look at the better lesson as we move quickly to verses 13 and 14. Consider the work of God, who can make that straight which he hath made crooked. In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. God also set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. Understanding the relationship between wisdom and resources doesn't remove us from hard times. Remember the reality about our resources. Our money's going to run out. And our wisdom will only get us so far. But there's, when you step back and realize that in life, there are so many circumstances beyond our control, that you and I may actually hit an event that will wipe out all of our resources. And how are we going to navigate life? That you and I may hit an event in life that will zap all the wisdom that we have available to us, and how do we move forward? Because having money doesn't keep us free from trouble. And having wisdom doesn't keep us free from having work problems, money problems, family problems, health problems. Makes life a lot easier. But it doesn't always remove those obstacles in life. It's because you and I define the quality of life in terms of our resources, with our wisdom, with our wealth, with our family, with our health. We determine That's the quality of life. If we just could get to that level, life would be comfortable. Remember, that's the fallacy. That's the error that we've been combating in this series. And the reality is this, we don't question God's goodness in times of abundance. When things are going really well, have you ever thought, why in the world is God doing this to me? What in the world is he up to? He's blessed me financially. He's blessed me with a great family. He's blessed me with strong health. What is he doing to me? Does it work that way? Not at all. We're very quick to bless his name, to praise his name about what he's given us. We don't question in times of abundance, but we do question God's goodness in times of trouble. You know what I'm talking about? How could he do this? In our griefs, it's really easy to get to that place where we try to figure out what he's trying to teach us. And if we're not careful, it gets to that place where our questions become indictments against God. You don't care about me. Because life is hard and difficult right now. You remember back in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 14? I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. God only knows what awaits us for tomorrow. Look at verse 14, the latter part. To the end that man should find nothing after him. God also hath set one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him. And ultimately, he does know what awaits us. He does understand that in good times and in bad times, you know, we define those good times based upon what we have. And we define the bad times based upon what we don't have. But if we were to step back and we could see from God's perspective what is going on in our lives, I wonder if we use the same criteria for judging our life as to whether it was good or bad. Not necessarily in terms of what we have, but how much are we relying and trusting in him versus how much are we relying and trusting in our own strength? At stake here is the satisfied life. Isn't one that's free of trouble, but one that rests in the sovereignty of God in our life. Is that comforting to you this morning, that Lord is in charge, that he's in control? And he knows what's ahead for you in the journey. And regardless of how we label it, good or bad, easy or difficult, is that a reassuring reality? Is that satisfying that he's in charge and that he knows? Remember, there's value in every moment of our life. Back at the very first part of verse 14, in the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider, God also hath set one over against the other. So there is real value in every moment of our lives, the good times in the bad times. And if we are trying to pad our lives so that we never experience difficulty or hardship, we can do a pretty good job of getting ourselves almost there. Our job, our family, our health. So there's value that you and I gather in every moment, opportunity to gather in every moment of life, but just sometimes we choose to waste that value in our misery. Remember in the good times, it's easy to say, God, thank you for what you've done. But getting to that place in the difficult moments, God, thank you for what you've done and for what you're teaching me. Now there's a wise response. It's coming to terms with this great reality that hope is found in the one who controls our circumstance. Hope is not found in our resources. Hope isn't even found in our own wisdom. Hope's found in godly wisdom. That night in the garden when Jesus prayed in John chapter 17, verse 3, "And this is life eternal, that they may know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent." You see, maybe the game that we've been playing in life about how much can we gather and how comfortable of life can we live wasn't even the game we should have been playing at all. It's coming to terms with our limitations, our sinfulness, and His graciousness that He came and He gave His life and He went to the cross and He was buried and He rose again the third day. And in the prodigal son, the parable of the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15, we see that father that gives to his son, who welcomes his son. And there was the other son that was in the house that said, "Wait a minute, Dad," the one who had had everything with him but never even left because he continued to work in the son's, the father's house. And when his brother comes home, he can't be happy. He can't rejoice because his brother's coming home and his dad's welcoming him. And the son's so upset thinking, "But you know what? I have done this. I kept the money that he gave me. I've worked really hard. And now what has he done? What has he done to me? He's welcomed in my brother, so I'm not going into my house because I don't love what my dad loves." And here inside the father's house, the other brother has the wrong value system. So just because we come to church doesn't mean that our lives are right or free from problems. Our lives are free, and our lives are full when we find our value in Jesus and not in stuff, in loving what the Father loves. And a hint, it's not gold. And another hint, it's not silver. May you and I not miss the sum value of every moment in our life that God is working and revealing to us moment by moment our limitations and showing us His limitlessness. So don't miss out the value of every moment in life. And the next time difficulty comes your way, I wouldn't say you'd be crazy if we thought someone stands up and says, "Hey, praise the Lord, look what I'm going through." But after all, isn't that what we see here at play in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 14? Rejoice in times of prosperity, but also in the day of adversity, consider God has set the one over against the other. And the secret to life isn't know what lies ahead in the journey, but knowing who is guiding us and who does. Here's our response this morning. Godly wisdom sees the real value in our everyday circumstances. So don't discount the importance of life's difficult moments. Only Jesus can give you a new heart to find real peace in the middle of adversity. That's the message of the gospel. That He alone is the answer, that He alone is the solution to our life's problems. May our prayers be this: Lord, give me the wisdom to see Your hand at work in my life in both the good times and the difficult moments.